I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Live from a thermal spa here on Lanzarote, we present The Wheezing Groaning Sound, the only Doctor Who podcast available by three men in matching speedos on an archaeological site, all with differently shaped theodolites. I am poor Chameleon Litchfield, and joining me as ever are two men who won't take the responsibility for passing pneumostomatum gas. Is that how you pronounce it? It's Tom Neenan and John Ray!
Yay!
So, if at first you don't succeed, try on again. As it's time to welcome Perry to the TARDIS as we get all hot and steamy with the Doctor in Planet of Fire. Now we end that with a no.
Do we have to?
I'm afraid we do. Yes, we have to talk about Planet of Fire. But before we do, allow me to tell you what was going on television on Thursday the 23rd of February 1984.
Oh, please do, because anything
I will, yes.
Watching Planet of Fire.
I'd watch any of these programmes. Doctor Who. However, here we go. At 9:20, we started off on BBC One with The Genuine Article. Don't know what that is, but the blurb is absolutely fascinating because it says, "Ever tried the egg trick to fake a signature?" What?
What?
No, I haven't, no. Well, we show you how it's done. What do you mean? How do you fake a signature with a fucking egg?
You put an egg up your arse and then it makes you write better.
Oh, I see. Right, so putting an egg up your arse means your penmanship and forgery skills increase.
Yeah, that's what they did in The Great Escape. No. Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, a bit later on, we had Open University, of course, a series of courses, looking into maths, the Cockcroft Report. What's all the fuss about? I don't know. And jam.
What?
Jam. I'm doing a 3-year Open University degree on jam and preserves.
Oh, I thought it was like Chris Morris being all strange.
We look at Chris Morris in 1984. Yeah. And then, of course, you had the news afternoon.
Of course.
The news just afternoon. No blur, but it does say weather with Jim Bacon.
Mm. Oh,
that's
Jim
a
Bacon.
Great name, isn't it? It's Jim Bacon with the weather.
Yeah, and so Harold Eggs read the news.
Yeah. And you can use Harold Eggs to fake a signature.
Oh, gee. And then after news at noon, you had bric-a-brac.
Yay!
Yes.
Brian Cant.
Yes, and there's a little bit of a blurb for this episode. Wally's wagon arrives with wet wheels. Poor old Wally.
Oh.
And then at 2 p.m. you had the afternoon show with Miss Barbara Dixon.
Yay!
Wonderful stuff. And they cover a variety of topics in the afternoon show. Aerobics. Is it really good for you? The menopause. Not really the time of your life.
Oh.
And this. Quiz time. Are you a manipulator or a victim? Christ.
Jesus. Oh my God.
A bit heavy for early afternoon, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh dear, it turns out I'm a victim.
See you next week.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Then at 4:35 was Fonz and the Happy Days Gang.
Hey.
Oh, is that the cartoon?
That's the cartoon.
Yeah,
yes,
I remember that.
Yes. And this is great. The gang gets involved in a witch hunt.
Jesus Christ.
Sunday, Monday, burn the witch. Tuesday, Wednesday, burn the witch.
if Fonz goes, hey, she's not a witch. So keep an eye on him.
If she's a witch, he can just thump the top of her and then she'll change back into a normal person.
Oh my God. Well, how do you know she's not a witch, Fonz? Well, case cleared. Fantastic. And then there was not much else on, but then at 20 to 7, Doctor Who, Planet of Fire, Part 1. There is blurb.
Oh, good.
On the planet Sarn, the truth about the god Logar is being sought, whilst on Earth, Perry wants a break from her stepfather. What?
Wow.
Eh? What?
Can't wait
take that and then... Oh dear. Then a bit later on BBC One, you had at 11:30 was a programme. This is bleak. Letting Go.
Oh.
6 films for parents with teenagers. Tonight, drugs, suicide, crisis. Christ. Whoa.
Jeez.
I mean, this was the year Threads was on telly, right?
Yeah.
Bleak old time, 1984.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah. Especially
when they opened that theme park, the Threads theme park. That was
terrible.
Horrible.
Do they have a mascot of the woman who pees herself?
Yeah.
You have your picture taken with her.
It's a children's fountain.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a log flume ride.
That's when she shat herself, obviously.
You get to the end of the log flume, it's just a picture of you looking up going, what the fuck? There's a huge, giant animatronic woman pisses on you. Would you like to buy the picture? No.
Doris!
Doris, I want to go to bloody Orange Towers now! How can I come back? No! Meanwhile, on BBC Two, we start off at 9:15 with Daytime on Two, which again is a mixture of, it's sort of like a magazine show stroke Open University course-based thing,
right?
Called Daytime on Two. So you had a variety of programs that just followed one after the other. One's called Encounters, a Teenage Disco.
Ooh.
Doris! I'm going to a teenage disco.
Fetch me up now, boots.
I'm going to do the jitterbug again. Encounters, a teenage disco. And then there was something called Talk About. And the subject was The Magic Bush. Doris! I'm going to be in the shed for most of the afternoon. God, I'm panic. Then there was a program called Home Ground. No idea. And then there's another one called Drink and Be Merry. Mm. And then there was Everyday Science. And finally, Shuttlecock. Doris! I don't know what's happened, but it's caught in the shuttlecock. Okay, book a taxi, I'm gonna go to A&E. Why can't you sit down properly, Bert? I've got a shuttlecock up my arm.
I knew Jesus Bert Christ. Would turn up at some point during our discussion of Planet of Fire, but I did not expect this early.
Well, come on. I mean, you know, the magic bush and shuttlecocks.
Yeah.
Wait until he sees the opening 20 minutes of Planet of Fire.
Yeah,
Jesus
yeah.
Christ.
He'll explode.
He goes into a coma. When he wakes up, Jodie Whittaker's the doctor.
And he goes off again.
I'm afraid he's gone. Afraid he's gone, Mrs. Burt. A little bit later on at 6:20 was Hooked. Hooked. Ooh. Live angling from the Newark on Trent.
Jesus Christ. Oh, what a bleak God. Year.
Yeah. Anything could be on TV.
Live angling from Newark on Trent. Oh. And it says this. Bob Church talks trout.
That's that angry reviewer again.
Yeah.
Right off with my bloody wife. Talks about a trout.
A at 9 p.m. was Dear Ladies. Lovely. Hilda and Evadne join a contemporary dance group. So see how that goes as well. Yeah. I can't do the splits, dear. And then at 9:30 was 40 Minutes.
Oh.
And it's called Queer Facts.
Well, there you go.
It's not, no, it's fine, because yep. it saves itself, it redeems itself.
Mm.
40 Minutes, Queer Facts, this week, pigeons. A man who breeds them, a man who eats them, a man who has never been to Trafalgar Square, and Shirley Bassey frightens them off the runways. What in heaven's name?
Sorry, a man who's... One of them, his qualification was he's never been to Trafalgar Square.
Yeah.
I presume because he's scared of pigeons.
Pigeons, yeah.
Oh, there you go. Mm.
Yeah, and apparently they used to... in London City Airport back in the 80s, they used to play Shirley Bassey tunes to scare the pigeons off the runway.
Mm. Well, in my mind, all these men who are afraid of pigeons were doing some modelling, and she ran in with a broom. Get off the runway! Get off! Lots of models.
In my mind, Dame Shirley Bassey was at a bit of a sort of, you know, dead end. There was nothing going on, so she got a job at London City Airport, standing on the runway shooing pigeons.
The minute you walk in the joint,
there's an Airbus lounge right next to her. Fucking hell. Anyway, there you go. So that was your television delights on BBC One and BBC Two.
Ooh, wow.
But we have procrastinated long enough.
Oh, let's dive in.
Should we do the points?
Yeah. Let's give it out of 100 not talking about it.
Mm. Yeah. let's put our clothes in a clear plastic bag and dive
in. Mm. Yes. Here we go. Mm. So we open on the planet Lanzarote. this is the problem. This is the problem, because it's set in two locations and they're both exactly the same, and they haven't bothered dressing any of the others.
No.
So to the layman, you think, is this all going on Lanzarote? What's going on?
Yeah.
There's some mad people up in a cage dressed like fucking idiots.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. So we open on two homoerotic Turkish Delight advert men.
Mm.
Nobody wears much clothes in these four episodes.
No, I really don't.
There's a lot of bare flesh.
And one of them's Wingard as well, so you know you're in trouble.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he's really wasted in this. He doesn't...
Oh, God, his voice. Jesus.
It's like he's so bored. Yeah. Anyway, two chaps scrabbling along a hot quarry. That's what they're having. And then it cuts to Peter Wingard, and I'm just going, is that his house? Is that where
it's
he lives?
It's a weird house, isn't
his
it?
His house. What is going on in that house? It's very odd. There's definitely key parties going on, and God knows what.
It's very A Place in the Sun, where they're like, yeah, Peter Wingard has decided that he won't be moving to Lanzarote because there aren't enough good schools.
I'd imagine that, I wonder if that's the only reason why they filmed it there, because that's actually his house on Lanzarote.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's so wasted.
It looks like a Playboy's house on Lanzarote, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
But he should be the villain in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes no sense that he's this kind of affable tribesman thing.
Yeah.
Well, his character is the usual Doctor Who character, isn't it, that we've seen so many times before?
Yeah.
Mm. Which is, we must obey the laws of this land. And there's people going, no, we mustn't. No, but you must.
Don't give that to Peter Wingard.
No, exactly. He should have been a big bad villain right from the off.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right, yeah. Mm. So we have a little conversation with him. And isn't that the chap? He's the chosen one, whoever he bloody is. Isn't he in Howard's Way?
I have no idea.
I think he is.
Right. Impressive eyebrows, I know that
got
much.
Great eyebrows that do independent acting to what he's saying.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And also, they have the usual conflab about rites, rituals and sacrifice. And you're like, yeah, okay, it's a standard trope.
Heard it.
Yeah. Wingard as well, he has a bad habit of mumbling, turning his back to the camera, and so like a lot of times, and he's outside as well. A lot of times, I just had no idea what he was saying.
No.
Yeah, yeah, he's very poorly mic'd up.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we cut back to the two men. Apparently, they're on the fire slopes of San. Let's say they are. I don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. And they're looking for evidence of Logar, but they find nothing. Logar is the god. But yeah. Again, you're going, that's Lanzarote, look. It's very strange.
You see William Hartnell on holiday, just like.
Yeah. Don't come to the hotel bar, they're going to stiff you. Okay. So far, all we have seen is upwards of 8 men hardly wearing any clothes running around in the heat.
Yeah.
So there you go. Malkin, I believe is the character's name, shows Wingard his sigil. A sort of, pardon the expression. Yeah. He's got a mark, isn't he?
I'm going to have to go to the doctor. I've got a mark on it.
Yeah. And Timonov, which is Wingard's character, talks of the destiny of Malcolm, but you don't know what that is, but it's really boring.
Yeah. Is it just me, by the way, or is that sigil on their arm? Is it really gross? I really hate it when they show that. I think it looks horrible.
Mm. It does look like it's going to be infected at any point.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the TARDIS, and I've just written here, the Doctor is obsessed and depressed at the same time. that's what Turlough seems to say to him. And then we meet, my God, the robot that is in... I mean, as soon as we meet this fucker, it's in mid-spasm, screaming at the top of its voice.
It looks like something out of, like, if they did a robot remake of Hellraiser.
Yeah.
It looks like it's got no skin. It's just lying there going...
Yeah, they find it in the same way I think Chameleon Doris often finds Bert, where he's like, yeah. I slipped and fell on it.
So we get to meet Chameleon.
Right. You would smother that immediately. Put it out of its pain.
Yeah.
So how did they meet Chameleon, Tom? You probably know.
I do. So Chameleon was in the King's Demons, and he was impersonating... Oh, who would that have been? I'm sorry, I'm very ignorant about this. Maybe that was another King Harold. No, it's the Bad King... Oh, I don't know. Anyway, it was the Master was using him, and then he was like, come along and join the TARDIS crew. And then he stayed in a cupboard for a year. Right. they never interacted with him. And then the next time you see him, he's plugged himself into the TARDIS and he's having a rotten old time.
It's unbelievable. Because Chameleon is an actual robot at stages, isn't it? A genuinely motorised robot. But because it's 1986... It can 84. Sorry, it can barely move its head. Barely lift an arm. It's so painful to watch.
And he was cursed.
Oh yes, yes. Tell us about the curse.
Yeah, my friend sent me this link. My friend Stephen Graham. The curse of Doctor Who's ill-fated robotic assistant Chameleon has been remarked upon before. His software designer was killed in a boating accident shortly after the character was invented. Both actors to play him on screen, Dallas Adams and Gerald Flood, died soon after. Not so true, but quite soon after.
Yeah.
And both these writers are dead.
Oh, no.
Neither were particularly old.
Okay.
Oh, God. So there you go. So that's everything surrounding Chameleon is just... It's just awful.
He's just so horrible to look at.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Aesthetically, he's just like a really angry ponce. He can't move.
No.
Then they have to have guys, like, obviously in suits to sort of give the impression that he can move a bit, which he clearly can't, because he can barely lift his neck. It's just awful.
I mean, you remember all the nonsense that they said about how K9 was not a good idea because it was so expensive to make. Why would they go and make a bigger, stupider robot thing?
A less agile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It must have cost a fortune as well for this show.
Oh my God. And he even gets he even turns up in the, you know, when Peter Davison is regenerating, he gets his own little twirly little head. He's going around there.
He just goes,
It's horrible. He just screams in agony. And there's a reason why we don't get a spin-off called fucking Chameleon and Company. Jesus Christ. And then loads of things happen really quickly and they're all really dull. There's a distress call, but Chameleon's the source of the distress call, or he's picking up a code from the distress call and then goes, sort of goes, oh, I'm tired of this scene. And Turlough just goes, I'll take over. He's a bit familiar with the TARDIS controls.
He goes a bit rogue, doesn't he?
He goes very rogue. Unbelievable. And then we cut to Perry.
Poor Perry.
Run away now, Perry. Run away now.
Don't get involved with these lads.
Right from the bat, folks, Perry is in 11 stories in total. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which comprises of 33 episodes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a rough indication of what happens to her. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Nearly drowns, hunted by the master, poison shot, molested, strangled by the doctor, double-crossed, offered a sacrifice, abandoned, berated, scolded, mucked about with, arrested, captured, beaten, tortured, nearly turned into a bird. Attacked by cannibals, trapped in prison, knocked unconscious, hunted for food, drugged, sent through time unwillingly, crashes, fed to a monster, molested, leered at, abused, forced into polygamy, pulled at, leered at... stripped down, shaved, and shot. I hope you enjoyed your time, Perry.
Yeah.
I mean, Mel got off lightly, didn't she?
Yeah. And it doesn't help that, like, Nicola Bryan's brilliant. Like, yeah.
She's so good. She's
this.
So good. She deserves none of it, the poor thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Anyway, we cut to Perry. She's with her stepfather on an archaeological site in the planet Sarn. Oh, no, sorry, Lanzarote. Where it clearly is. And she's really bored.
Really bored. And also we start the trope of Perry barely wearing any clothes.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And she's talked about this. Because she starts off like that, they go, well, that's how you're now going to look. Mm. And she's like...
Yeah.
And apparently during the filming of Doctor Who, she got hypothermia a couple of times.
Oh,
she
gosh.
Really suffered because of wearing nothing at all. Mm. But then so far, nobody's wearing anything apart from Timonov.
Mm. Yeah. And he's naked under that.
And he's naked under that, you can tell. By the way, you can tell by the way the chalice keeps moving. Anyway, Perry's really bored and she says to her stepfather that she's just met two random strange men and she wants to go to Morocco with them.
Oh, goodness.
Unbelievable.
Maybe
don't
she's
go
too
with
trusting.
Yeah.
Very. I think that's what it must be. Mm. Too trusting. Anyway, there you go. And so her stepfather Howard is like, oh, you can't do that, you don't, no, don't be so silly. And in the meanwhile they fished out a massive
dildo.
Golden dildo.
Yeah. There's no getting away from it.
It's an ancient Greek dildo or something. But it's got the same image as the sigil that's on
the triangles.
And it kind of goes wow wow.
Yeah, and it goes wow 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 wow. So it's got its own porn soundtrack as well. And so Howard is like, no, come on, you can't do that. And then it cuts to the TARDIS appearing on the beach.
Yay!
And it's lovely, it's lovely. I like that TARDIS on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard goes, oh, I suppose I will let you go because you are getting on, not getting on, but you are getting older and more independent. But double crosses her and then just leaves her on the boat. Like, ha ha, you're trapped there forever on the boat. No food, no, the engine don't work, you might die, ha ha.
And, that is a bold move, isn't it? That she's literally just trapped.
Very
there.
Bold move.
Also, bear in mind, he never sees her ever again, so he probably, probably feels a bit bad about that now.
Oh, but he does, John, he does. Yeah. All painted silver and making no fucking sense.
Yeah, but that's
but
not
we'll
him.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, no, but oh, God. Anyway, so we now cut to unrest between the people of Sarn, the standard Doctor Who trope, as once again there are believers and unbelievers of the Fire Guard Logar. So, Timonov's all, we must respect and sacrifice, and there's lots of other people going, bullshit, bullshit, such thing as Logar. So it's the usual, I mean, this has happened like 80 times now.
So many times,
So many times, but this, for some reason, it stands out, but there you go. We now get the Doctor coming out, and I must admit, coming out the TARDIS with a beautiful waistcoat.
Yeah, a little knitted waistcoat.
So
isn't that lovely? I wish he wore that
Shame about the braces, though, eh?
Well, the question mark braces.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But there you go. That's when the rocks
question
set in,
marks
wasn't it?
All over them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I really like his fetching waistcoat.
Yeah.
He has a little chat to the archaeologist just to pass some time. And the Doctor has got a little bit of a gizmo with him. He wants to try and triangulate the coordinates to the mysterious signal that he picked up. Even though I think it might have been Chameleon that was sending... Anyway, that's never clear. And Turlo decides that he's had enough of Chameleon going... and just switches him off like, fuck you.
Just fucking stamp on his face until it's dust.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. Perry then decides to take even more clothes off, if she can... And jumps in the sea and then forgets that she can't swim, I presume.
I mean,
because she's got a giant... She's managed to put all her belongings and money and everything into a carrier bag as a natural float. And even then she's like, oh, God, I forgot I can't swim. So Turlo strips off. Bow, wow, 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 wow. We need more male nudity in this episode, so Turlo's going to strip off to his Speedos and run in to save her.
Begrudgingly, mind.
Yeah, he's just a bit like,
he's livid about it.
Furious.
Yeah, he's like, God, the bloody pebbles in Lanzarote are very sharp. Oh, for God's sake. But yes, he saves her, Meanwhile, the doctor's just having some ouzo in a tavern, looks like. Waiting to pick up a signal. And then he pays the bill with alien coins.
That's a bit of fun, isn't it? That's
you get the waiter going, what the hell is this, sir? It looks like the floor from the adventure game. Well, it does. It's little coloured symbols there. Anyway, so there you go. So far, not much has really been happening, folks.
Hi there. I'm Yasmin Akram. Join myself and my friend Philippa Dunn each week for our podcast, We Heart Worry, a show about cars and their engines. Obviously not. It's a show where we talk about our fears, our worries and our anxieties in a bid to help you with yours. And we just have a laugh as well. So join us. There's nothing to be scared of. I promise.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We then cut back to the planet Sarn. Is anything happening? Not really.
No,
Timonov's just demanding a sign from the fire god. But suddenly the fireplace switches on. And it's not a fireplace. It's supposed to be like this massive sacrificial chamber, isn't it? But it looks like... and that switches on. And he's like, a sign! A sign! Turlo picks up the poor old bedraggled Perry, takes her to the TARDIS. Then the doctor goes back to the TARDIS. I don't know if he's found the signal or not, but he's like, I'll go back to the TARDIS now.
May as well.
I'm off. And, can't have a nap.
Yeah.
And then Chameleon decides to do something. He turns into a man in a dinner jacket, which is also stepfather. Mm. And you have no idea why. Perry hasn't got a fucking clue.
So far, there's been so many things that I think just spy that it's going to be a terrible Doctor Who story.
Yes,
the Doctor
yes.
following a signal is always like, and then sort of villagers discussing their religion. It's like the two things where you're like, this isn't going to be a good one, is it? This isn't
Also, have we skipped over the part where he puts Perry in bed and he's wearing tiny pants?
I wanted to skip that bit, but we can dwell if you want.
It was just a bit of a horrible thing to look at.
Perry really. Soaking wet, lying on a bed with a man in speedos standing over
it.
Meanwhile, there's a burnt out robot that's suddenly appearing as a stepfather. It makes perfect sense.
That is the worst day anyone could ever have.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
So Timonov decides that because of these silly unbelievers coming in going, we've been to the fire pits and there's no Logar, he decides to make a big sacrifice. Luckily, the Doctor is back in the TARDIS now. I presume he's triangulated the spot because they now appear on the planet Sarn, but because they haven't been asked to make any difference between Lanzarote and Sarn, it just looks like they haven't gone anywhere and there's just some mental people up a hill taking drugs. That he's just
so
bombed their
if...
party. It's very strange.
Johnson they Manson filmed... family.
Yeah. Tom. Yeah. Anywhere else, like if it had just been anywhere else other than Lanzarote, actually it would be quite impressive. And Sarn, you'd be like, Sarn looks good. That looks amazing.
But I think all they needed to do was colour the sky orange or red, or just do something. Just something, because there's no difference at all. You're just they're on Lanzarote all the time. I will not accept this. But there you go. So the Doctor now, the TARDIS appears on the planet Sarn, rushes into the big chamber, and then now the prophecy is coming true because an outsider has come, and apparently that's very important to Timonov. But then suddenly Howard walks in, Metal Howard, and then suddenly... turns into the master.
It's Merle Howard.
I'm a lot of fun. You will obey me. And the master, Perry obviously screams because she's now coming to terms with so much.
Yeah. A lot has happened to Perry already.
She's nearly drowned. She's been thrown in a mysterious man's bedroom and appeared on a different planet. And now she sees a man. She sees a man that looks like her stepfather, painted silver, turn into a very strange man with a goatee. Because I am the master, and you will obey me. End of part one.
And he's holding a book and a Polaroid camera
and a tripod, and he's got many ideas. Anyway. We cut back to
picture,
yeah. Go on, please.
We were sent a picture of Ainley with his book. Was that a real picture or was that photoshopped? Is that genuinely holding his book?
If that's genuinely him, that's like that's police evidence. If that's really him, going Oh dear. So we cut to episode two, where the unbelievers, have been they're being sort of ushered into the fire. But then they cancel it because the outsider's here, which is either the Doctor or it's the Master. The Master decides that he's going to take advantage of these idiot people and he's going to pretend to be the chosen one, isn't he? That's the usual. Yeah. But then the Master loses control of Chameleon, because what you don't quite know yet is the Master is controlling Chameleon from inside his own TARDIS.
Yeah.
So weird. And this is true, he's controlling Chameleon, but every so often he can't quite get to grips with Chameleon's circuits or control him with his mind-bending machine, whatever he's fucking doing. Yeah. So occasionally Chameleon will look a bit like Howard, Perry's stepfather. I don't know why, but it does.
I don't know why. I'm guessing because the robot was just so shit.
Yeah,
I don't know what it's talking about and stuff. So
I don't know what it is. So the Master loses control, becomes Chameleon again. Turlo reveals a little bit of plot information about himself by saying that the sigil is the Misos Triangle. So there you go.
Where people disappear.
Misos Triangle. Okay, tomorrow.
By the way, there's a missed opportunity here that every time the Master loses control, Chameleon should turn into a celebrity for a little cameo.
Exactly.
Ronnie Corbett. Yeah, nice. Just suddenly turns into Matt Bianco for no reason.
Why are you so shit?
I was going to say, the Doctor turns around and goes, why are you so shit? So there you go. And now we get another TARDIS appearing, but it's disguised as a column, so you know it's a working TARDIS. Its Chameleon circuit is working, and you go, oh, that must be the Master. He's here. Ooh. Chameleon now struggling back as sort of half robot, half her Uncle Howard, or her stepfather Howard, says, run away, to Perry, and Perry legs it. The Master then regains control of Chameleon from inside his TARDIS, and then gets the Master Chameleon to release himself from his own TARDIS, because you get the impression that the Master is trapped in his own TARDIS.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I really hope the actor who is playing Howard, like, only read his bits of the script, just have no idea.
Never
what
bothered
was
with anything like that. Then suddenly there's a big volcanic eruption and the Master's TARDIS falls down. Which is all very No Lebens Crinkly Bottom now, isn't it?
Yeah.
All like, oh, the TARDIS has fallen over, oh dear. It's okay if you want. So Perry is now fleeing alone across an alien planet, Sarn, which is really, as we all know, Lanzarote. And the Master decides that the best way to solve this is to make his own TARDIS appear inside the Doctor's TARDIS, or the other way round. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
Timonoff is having a meltdown because he now thinks, oh, maybe there's two chosen ones. I'm confused. Oh, let's kill the heretics anyway. And then Perry is now wandering around, falling on loose scree for a bit. and then she spots the Doctor and Turlo just having a walk. She catches up with them and they're welcomed by some locals and there's absolutely zero peril.
Well, she says at one point, she shouts Turlo. And I was like, I don't remember Turlo ever
telling you my name.
Himself. Yeah. And it's quite
I remember
an
telling,
name
you,
for
telling
it,
you my name as I carried your unconscious semi-naked body into a bedroom. there you go. The Master appears, is it Chameleon? And
it's Chameleon because we know what the Master's up to.
Yeah, and a vital bit of the TARDIS has been taken out. I can't remember who did it. I think Turlo does it, or Perry picks it up by mistake and runs away with it. Couldn't give a shit.
I would say at this point, Peter Davidson, like, because Peter Davidson isn't wearing all his sort of his cricket jumper clobber. And everything else, his clobber, you sort of get the fit. He's a lithe old fellow, isn't he, old Peter Davidson?
Yeah,
he's looking
absolutely.
Very supple. Yeah, I think he's looking very good.
Spry.
I just wish, yeah, like you say, it wasn't just the braces that he had on. Because without that, you're like, oh, it's quite a good costume. I quite like that one.
Yeah.
So the Master Chameleon Howard thing, it all gets revealed. Everyone, you'll be definitely satisfied. Catches up with Perry, who sort of backed herself off into a corner of a cliff after looking through a very conveniently placed telescope.
Yes,
I presume she had the I presume she had the 20 lira coin to stick in. Sorry, the 20 sarn coin. And then the master's literally going to, like, he's like, you will obey me. And she's like, no, I won't. And then he's like, oh, and he loses control again and becomes chameleon, come a chameleon, and then becomes Howard again.
He must have been sweating his balls off, must have been this whole time. Getting in a black three-piece suit in Little Lanzarote.
Yeah. So Perry decides there's no other recourse than just to slide back down some igneous based screw. And that's, I've been to Lanzarote. Those stones are sharp. They're very sharp. You don't want to fall over in Lanzarote, I tell you. So Perry has a slide down. That's the most fun she's ever had now. She's just sliding and enjoying herself. Timonoff has now come round to the idea that the master is probably now the sign and decides he's going to worship him. Because Timonoff needs something to believe in and to do, apparently. Mm-hmm. The doctor finds a weapon, apparently. this is a weapon. And Tolo reveals that this weapon is very familiar with him. It's from his old dad's ship, which is lovely. It's like, my dad used to have one of them. Yeah.
He also had this butterscotch candy.
Oh, you do? My name? It's Tolo.
Oh, he hung up.
Meanwhile, Tolo is with... What's he called? Malcon or bloody Malcolm, whatever he's called.
I think he's called, who cares?
Malcon, yeah, whatever. Yeah. And goes, listen, you're not the only one with a sigil on your arm. Look at mine! And pulls his trousers down. No. shows everyone his triangle. No, he pulls his sleeve up and he's got an identical one. Yeah. And you're like, oh. Perry, in the meanwhile, has found a crashed ship. She doesn't know that, but she's found a crashed ship. She gets inside, and there's Tolo and Malcon inside, which is very handy, isn't it? Yeah. She's been wandering around by herself, saw the doctor, lost him, found the master, lost him, and now she's found Tolo and Malcon with their identical sigils.
This planet Jesus must be Christ. The size of a marble, mustn't it?
Like, yeah, it's the size of a very...
You run into everyone so easily.
Hot marble. Yeah. I imagine a really, really annoyed tourist who are going, I don't care if you're filming Doctor Who, this is my holiday! Can you imagine? There must be loads of tourists going, no, I won't back out of shot. Fuck you. Please, get this shot. Me and Joyce have got 2 weeks.
But like for the crew and everyone in the bar, like it, you know, at the end of the day filming, do you think it was all worth it for them? Because I'd imagine that's where the real fun and entertainment was.
I was going to say, I'd imagine the evenings there were quite good fun on the local grappa and whatever. They probably had a laugh, but my God, the filming. They didn't really need to go to Lanzarote at all.
I mean, is there any coincidence to the fact that when they do go to exciting locations, apart from City of Death, the episodes are always shit?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Mm. There's that. Mm-hmm. So the master is now playing the part, saying, "I am the incarnation sacrifice or chosen one of Logar, whatever." And Timonoff is really happy, and so are his cohorts. But then the doctor turns up and goes, "Actually, no. He's an imposter. He's playing a part." But then the master goes, "Well, actually, you're an imposter." And so Timonoff goes, "Well, we'll just burn the doctor, I suppose. I don't know."
Also, can we talk about? I forgot to mention it earlier when Perry kicks the master in inverted commas.
Yeah,
and then she goes, kicks him in the shins, doesn't she?
Because he's a metal robot man. Yeah.
Very good.
She kicked him in the balls and it should have gone dong.
Should have been the sound of the cloister room bell. Yeah. So basically the cliffhanger is very important, folks. We talk about cliffhangers in these four, because number one is, I am the master, you will obey me, Finn. Mm. Number two is, push everyone into the fire, Finn. And now, at the end of episode 3, we will discuss, quite possibly, the funniest, most insane Doctor Who finale I have ever had the misfortune to witness. Yeah. But we need to get there first, because as we left the Doctor, he was about to be pushed into a fire, they just change their mind and don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is literally what happens.
Yeah.
actually, stop the sacrifice. Timonoff, make a fucking solid decision once in your life. Sacrifice them, don't sacrifice them. Sacrifice them, don't sacrifice them.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Sorry, Tom, you're going to say something. Please say something.
Well, no, because we're not there yet, but there are two of my favourite... I think two of my favourite Master moments of all time are in this particular episode. we'll see if you mention them, so I can't wait.
All right.
Well, end of episode three is definitely my favourite Master moment. But anyway, so, yeah, so they decide to not do the sacrifice. Whatever. And Turlo has gone deep into the bowels of the volcano where there's a control panel that can turn fire on and off, and you go, all right. And so the Doctor then confronts the Master and saying, you're actually the Master, you're an idiot, and tries to sever the connection with the Master to Chameleon, so there's a lot of Chameleon going, and occasionally lots of befuddled looking Howard going, I'm so sorry, I'm still in this.
I thought I was going to have a fun day. Yeah. And now he's in a studio in Shepperton or something, painted silver.
But for the ninth time, the Master manages to gain control. It's like, oh, God, all right. And that fire pit, which is now put out, they just go, oh, stick him in there. It's somewhere to put them for a bit. So let's put them in the cell, because Doctor always has to get put in a cell at some point.
Always,
so
that,
yeah. But then Perry rushes in. She's like, I don't know what's going on. And the Master keeps up the Logar pretense and says, I'm taking Perry with me. And they all go, yeah, all right.
Yeah, it's fine.
Absolutely fine. Turlo, after turning off the air vents or whatever he's fucking doing, has now moved like 700 miles and is now back with Malcolm again, and opens the cell and just lets everyone out. So that's that dealt with.
Yeah.
And then the Turlo goes, oh, Doctor, I've never shown you this before. I've got a strange sigil on my arm as well. And the Doctor goes, oh, yeah, that's the Missos Triangle. Are we going to talk about it? No. No.
They keep on cutting between the Master in a very cool suit and the Master in his usual getup with his like shoulder pads and his thing. You're like, why do you not see that one of these is demonstrably better than the other one? That him just wearing a good suit is so much more like he looks so much better than him when he's got all his weird finery. You're like, keep this the whole time. You know,
much better than when he's got his ballerina costume on with a pinwheel hat, you know.
Have we got to the bit yet where the Doctor says to Turlo, are you keeping something from me?
Yeah, we're coming up to that.
Oh, good. That was my favourite Doctor bit in this whole story.
It's this very bit where Turlo reveals that he's got this Missos thing, and the Doctor's like, this stuff you have not been telling me. And judging by so far, because Turlo was a bit of a sneaky bugger, wasn't he? And in episode one, he decides to sort of fly the TARDIS, do shit to the TARDIS without the Doctor even knowing. The Doctor's like, all right, you're a bit bloody Andy with my ship.
He says, if you're keeping something from me, we can never be friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's harsh, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's a good bit of Davison acting as well.
But it's also slightly childish as well.
Tell
me, you're not my friend. I'm going to push you into dog shit.
We'll never play doctors and nurses again.
Turlo must have been slathered in Factor 50, right? Because if that...
Oh, my God, can you imagine?
Yeah.
It'd be much better if they forgot to put the cream on him. And as we go into episode four, he's got bright red legs. Like, ow.
It's like a lobster.
Anyway, now the Master has got everyone on board, the nasty little fellow. He decides he's going to get everyone to work for him. And the first thing he gets them to do is, could you straighten up my TARDIS, please? So they have to pull a big rock up. Because I'd imagine inside the TARDIS all the pots and pans have fallen out. And, all his evil pots and pans.
Yeah.
And also, I'd imagine...
Jazz mags are everywhere.
His big book of whatever is, yeah. Also, I presume that the Master's probably flying around inside the TARDIS.
If he's in there, Paul.
Oh, he is definitely in the TARDIS, John. He's definitely in the TARDIS,
true,
isn't he?
Sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Anyway, so the Doctor goes into... so the TARDIS is straightened, the Master's TARDIS.
Yeah.
Doctor just goes in. I presume it just leaves the door open. The Master does. I'm not sure. Maybe the crash opened the door. Who gives a shit? Goes in and decides, well, actually, because a bit of my bloody TARDIS has had something taken out of it, I'm going to take something out of the Master's TARDIS. And so takes a bit out. You don't really know what it is. It is mentioned, but I just couldn't care. So they've done that.
Have we missed my favourite bit of... this is my favourite master moment, I think, ever, because it's so petty. Which is where the master gets into his own TARDIS, and just before he shuts the door, he turns to Peter Wingard and goes, "Gullible idiot," and then just slams the door.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I love that because it's so petty. He basically goes, "Fuck you,"
and you were shitting Flash Gordon.
Yeah,
because all the way through this, you're going, "What? There's two masters? What's going on?" Because there's the master who's somewhere, but you don't know, but you think he's inside the TARDIS, which turns out to be true. But he's control. But also he takes over Chameleon and becomes the master. You don't really know how that works, but so there's two masters wandering around. But yeah, I forgot the bit. He goes inside and then literally he's like, "Don't let your ass hit you on the way out." and Perry's also in the TARDIS, but the Doctor's sort of gone. I don't know why. It's really weird. So the master goes, "Oh, you again? Oh, brilliant. I'll capture you again. I think it's the third time I've captured you now. Yeah, I'm not probably, really counting." Yeah. And she's like, "Oh, come along now. I've had enough of this." And he goes, all right, listen. I'm going to show you a demonstration of my power." And shrinks, boil washes three spacesuits. He just literally goes, "Watch this." And shrinks three suits. What? What?
Okay.
All right. I won't mess with you.
Yeah, like when you put crisp packets in the microwave, they go all small. Exactly.
Turn out your pockets. You had a tissue in them. Look at it now.
And watch this. He opens the washing machine and puts a red sock in.
No. Yeah. No. Watch this. Pretends to pull the top of his thumb off. Oh, he's evil. He's pure evil. So the master shrinks some spacesuits to scare Perry, which is brilliant.
I mean, luckily she ran away before he got his inside of his pockets out and started undoing his flies.
Do my elephant impression.
Now Turlough's got his own little bit of subplot where he goes, "Do you know what? I'm probably the chosen one now, aren't I?" And they're like, "Well, no, Malcolm's still around. No, I'm the chosen one now. Look, I've got the symbol." And they go, "Yeah, all right, yeah, you must be the chosen one. I've only met you for 5 minutes, though. But no, fuck it, you're the chosen one." And even Timlov goes, "Yeah, I'm fine with that. Even though I've spent all my years practicing the law of the gods on this fire planet and Logar, complete strangers turned up, someone who apparently backcombs his fucking eyebrows, and he says, he's the fucking chosen one. Yeah, all right, fuck it, why not? You're the chosen one. All right, then go and do that for me. Yes, chosen one." What? They barely met the man.
Is there also a problem here, which is that demonstrably the Master's TARDIS looks better than the Doctor's TARDIS?
Oh, the Master's TARDIS is cool, isn't it? That dark interior really works.
Yeah.
It really just, because the balls of light look so much better with the dark.
The Rani's one looks better than the Doctor's TARDIS as well.
Yeah. And the Rani's one is a wool shop. Yeah. I think the only thing that maybe gives you a slight sort of indication as to Timonov's character is he does reveal at this bit where Tylo's like, "I'm the chosen one," and he talks about, "Well, when I was young, I went on a pilgrimage," and was it he inhaled some gas? So that maybe is like, "Oh, is that why you're insane now?" Yes, it is. That's why I'm insane now.
Well, someone farted on your head.
Yes, I inhaled someone's farts and I went mad. Okay, yeah, all right, if that's what you want to do. Sure. Meanwhile, the master is now down into the bowels of the cave where Turlough previously turned off the cavey, wavy earthquake explosions and starts being the master and knowing what he's doing and causes earthquakes. And there's a huge earthquake. And so the Doctor goes, "Oh, my God, listen, everyone inside my TARDIS is better." And they're like, "What's a TARDIS?" He's like, "Shut up, just go in that blue box." So the entire population, there's six of them, go inside the TARDIS.
I would also argue that that's another sign that maybe a Doctor Who story isn't that great, is when the TARDIS is very crowded. I think is always a sign, like it happens in Time and the Rani when all the geniuses crowd in and stuff. I think I always think it's a bit of a this story's gone a bit off the rails
when you spend too much time in the TARDIS as well.
So the Master is now causing all this earthquake. The Doctor is sheltering all the indigenous people. The Master's cackling away. He's absolutely brilliant. And he turns on the Calagas stove on top of the volcano because you get a blue flame. And everyone's like, "Oh, it's a sign, it's a
sign. Don't you love being in control?"
So he's done that. And apparently this is very important because this blue flame is actually contains traces of
No idea.
It contains cinnamon. Fuck it.
Got you.
He's a blue flame special. He's young, dumb, and full of cum.
Yeah. This is a very special flame because the master. This has been the master's plan all along, is to get this Calagas stove working.
And he gets a giant pot from space, puts it on, and makes giant porridge.
Yeah. Makes a massive plate of beans.
That's all he wanted to do was have a 400,000-foot plate of beans.
Which we may find out in a bit is problematic.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my god. Absolutely. So then the Doctor then goes, hang on, I'm now going to leave the TARDIS, even though the world's all shaking, because I've decided suddenly, because I've seen that blue flame, that that must be cinnamon gas or whatever it bloody is. So can some of you come with me, and we go into that fire pit and we'll scrape the walls and get a sample? And they go, yeah, all right, if that's what you want to do in the middle of this earthquake. He said, yeah, that's what I'd like to do, please. So they go, okay. Meanwhile, the Peri is now alone inside the Master's TARDIS going, what is that devil up to? But she's also like, where is he? Where is the bugger? And the not master, chameleon thing, has made her pick up a box called the control box.
Oh, God.
And place it onto the floor of the TARDIS. And now Peri, because her curiosity gets the better of her, she's like, what is in that box? And we get possibly the most entertaining cliffhanger. This is supposed to be threat. This is supposed to be threat. This is a moment. She opens a little tiny black box. There's the master inside. A tiny master who goes, you will obey me. Which is exactly what he said in the previous cliffhanger, except he's about 1 inch tall.
How they thought that was in any way threatening.
And then
that's just the funniest thing I've ever seen.
And then that woman comes out and goes, master, and jumps up on the chair. And a cat comes in and starts chasing him with a frying pan.
So basically the master is a little shrunken master in his own TARDIS, yes, but in a box with a control room in it. It's just the weirdest, most baffling piece of nonsense I've ever seen.
It's pathetic.
This is the thing, it is supposed to be a big pivotal moment, but it's just pathetic and silly and very, very funny.
Living with that for a week.
Yeah.
He has to do a shit in the corner of the box, I presume. There's nowhere to go.
Like tiny rabbit pellets.
Peri should have just picked him up and flung him at a wall like one of those men that kind of walk down
windows. I was going to say, the immediate response to that is just splat. Just splat him. End of the master.
Put the lid back on and start chucking the box around the room.
Exactly, kick it around the room. Kick the fucker around the room. Take him to the top of Mount fucking San and just roll him down.
Boiler kettle, pour it in.
Yeah. It's like getting rid of an ant's nest. There we go. I've got rid of that master's nest, thank you. Yeah. I've been laying salt down for weeks, but he still gets in, the bugger. It's just to reveal the it's a point of view shot for the master of Peri looking down like, what? She doesn't know what the master is. She doesn't know what he is. She's been used to this half master, half robot, half her bloody father thing. And there's a small man in a shoebox going, you will obey me! Says, motherfucker.
But it doesn't end there because he gets out and starts running around like David Bellamy.
She sort of kicks the box in anger, then he comes out and scuttles around like a little cockroach.
She does the one thing you shouldn't do, which is she just tips it up and then he escapes, is the most unhelpful thing to do. Because like you say, just putting the lid on makes him...
More less of a threat. And before you put the lid on, Peri, do a massive fart in the box. Put some sellotape round it and chuck it in the fucking sea. Jesus Christ. So anyway, I'm the master human being. I spent 20 minutes rolling around the floor in laughter at that.
Oh my God.
That is the most pointlessly stupid. She does take off her shoe and like, come here, you bugger.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, you won't get me.
You'll get me, I'm the master. Beep, beep.
I'm the gingerbread man. Jesus, he ends up on the back of a fox.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, dear.
So the doctor now sort of scrapes off some of the healing mismisman cinnamon gas thing. And goes, oh, I know why the master's here. This is a very special healing gas, and he's probably at the end of his regenerations, and he wants to get in the gas, and he'll be all bloody strong and happy again. This is what this fucking thing's all about, I hope. And we all go, we don't care. We just don't care at this point. No, there's a small, tiny, miniature Mazda running around his own TARDIS.
Because finding the Master's plan is less relevant than the fact that the Master, you can literally just, you can put him in a cafetiere and crush him. And that's it sorted.
You can put him in a fucking Breville and toast him.
You can put him under a pint glass and just blow cigarette smoke in. Like you do with wasps.
Yeah. I mean, why don't they go the whole hog and just have the rest of this episode the Master riding around on a mouse? With a fucking, you know, pointy fucking toothpick as a sword. I'm Sir Master! Woohoo!
Just get Wingard to bend over and stick him out his arsehole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh dear, a butt plug. Bye bye, Master.
He is the chosen one. Shut up. Shut up. Everything's the chosen one. You pointed at a bit of bread earlier and said it was the chosen one.
Everything's the chosen one. I'll pick one thing. You are the chosen. That's your reflection, you prick. Oh, God. Anyway. Tyler then goes, Doctor, look, my symbol. And the Doctor goes, yeah, no, you've already shown me. And he goes, yeah, but it's a key now. And he goes, is it? Is it? He goes, yeah, I've decided it might be a key. Mm. And Doctor goes, yeah, right, then why don't you go over to that crash ship and see if you could do something with your fucking key? I don't give a and goes, listen, stuff's going on. Why don't you summon a spaceship or something? Literally, like, summon a spaceship and get help. And Tyler goes, yeah, I'll do that with my sigil. Yeah, all right. Sure. Go on then, Tolo. Off you go. Meanwhile, the Master's hiding around in the...
Looks like he's in the broom cupboard. It's like Ed the Duck.
It's so awful.
It completely demeans the Master throughout all this has been a really ridiculously funny existential threat that's just silly and tedious.
He has a punch up with Morph in a minute.
It's just literally becomes Pickle Rick. It's just ridiculous. It is just previously he's wandered around going, I am Chameleon. You will obey. Just everything about the Master of this, he has got no dignity at all.
No, none.
This is definitely the worst Master story I've ever seen.
Survivor. Anyway. You're right. It is dreadful. So Tyler reveals that his family gave him the sigil, or it's from his home planet, and these people on Cyana are like an offshoot of his own race from another planet, and that he and his family went on the run for being like war criminals, or they were accused of being war criminals.
Yes.
Or maybe they were just war criminals. I don't know. Maybe they just went around shooting loads of people and were horrible. I don't know what it is. But Tolo decides to reveal that. And then the Doctor gets... the Doctor decides, because the earthquakes have stopped now because the Mismus and cinnamon gas is on, decides to go for a walk, but gets trapped by some library footage of lava.
And then absolutely, Paul, because Perry. At this point, I think I couldn't even... Like, the sort of...
You don't care anymore, do you?
It's just like, I was watching going, who cares? The Master's tiny.
Exactly. Once you've got over the Master's now, I should say,
for everyone listening, Paul and Tom told me in the WhatsApp, because I hadn't seen this before, you know, look forward to the episode 3 cliffhanger. But they gave me no clue what it was. And I don't think I'd stop laughing for ages. I couldn't believe how pathetic and funny it was. And after that, I don't care what happens. The Master's tiny and lives in a box.
Now, this obviously, I presume, again, is an offshoot of a previous adventure where he was made small. Or did he just, because he's got his shrinky gun, did he one day literally, like a comedy character, look at his own gun, a damn thing's not working, and shoots himself so he's tiny? I don't know how it works.
Because Chameleon's got the gun.
Because Chameleon's got the gun, so what, they're two guns? Whatever.
Oh, my God.
It just makes no sense.
No,
no sense.
Anyway, so Tolo gets back to the crash ship and contacts Tryon Control, and a guy goes, what's your designation? And he goes, AB38 Kajagugu ABC, whatever it is. And the guy goes, Tolo? And he goes, yes. And he goes, don't worry, all's forgiven. And Tolo goes, oh, that's handy. And he goes, yeah, we'll probably send a ship over to you.
Luckily that guy you ran over was a drug dealer.
Jesus Christ. So the Doctor is now attempting to slow down the seismic eruptions, but he's now in the control centre, but he can't seem to stop it. For some reason. I don't know what the master is now doing. He's just, oh, he crawls out of the TARDIS at one point, doesn't he?
He does sort of slip through
the keyhole or something. I don't know what's going on.
Just so for your information, the last time we saw the master was at the end of The Five Doctors. So in between then and now, he is, I reckon what he's done is he's tried to sort of reverse engineer his shrink thing. And he's pointed it at his crotch, and it's, it's gone wrong.
God, yeah. Imagine if he was running around normal size, but his cock was like 50 feet long.
He's the only Time Lord that puts his dick in the TARDIS and holds onto the doors. When it dematerialises.
You have to curl it up in one of those hose things.
Literally, this strange object appears with a man clinging onto the side. Oh my god.
His arse on fire.
So the Doctor is slowing down the seismic eruptions, can't seem to stop it, it's now out of control, so he goes into the Master's TARDIS and nicks his temporal stabiliser. There you go. Mm. But then the Master appears, the Master Chameleon appears, not the tiny Master who's like, and basically goes, get out, so they all go, oh god, all right then. Mm. There's no peril or fighting, it's just get out. Yeah. And they go, yeah, all right, yeah, we'll go.
Fair enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. And then the character you're supposed to give a shit about is Almond. Fuck it.
Yeah. And, Almond Slice.
He decides to come in as Logar and go, I am Logar. And everyone goes, it's Logar. And goes, look, I tell you I'm Logar and I can pass through the flames. But he's got a special flame-proof suit on. And then everyone goes, oh, Logar's real or something. And the Master's like, no, I'm Logar. No, oh, fuck you, the game's up. But doesn't matter, I've got the Calagas stove on. And he steps into the blue cinnamon gas and he's like, ha, 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 ha. Soon I will become more powerful. Ha, 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 ha. And then the Doctor goes, no, you won't. And no. And the Master goes, well, I will. And the Doctor goes, no, you won't.
Oh, God. What I really like, the little detail I like, is that while they're doing all this, the shrunken suits are still hanging up behind
them. Yeah, still there.
Yep, still there.
Still there. Still there. And it's not clear if the Doctor sort of goes, now I've got you where I want you, and fiddles with the controls. I don't think he does. It just malfunctions or goes wrong. I don't think the Doctor is the one that destroys the plan. I think the Doctor just stands there going, and then it sets on fire, and the Doctor's like, oh, right, yeah. No. And the Master's like, no, I'm on fire. Oh, no. And then sort of blows up. And you go...
Does he threaten to sort of reveal something? Because doesn't he say at the end, he's like, would you do this to your own... And people are like, is he going to say brother? Is that what he's going
to
say?
To your wife?
Yeah. To your own cousin? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Meanwhile, Timonov is still clinging on to the belief of the Fire God still. Turlough, after sending the beacon to help, has gone back to the TARDIS and repaired it. And then the Master's still going, And then, of course, because it's like any ending of a James Bond film, once the flames have consumed the Master, then the whole thing's going to collapse now. So it's wobbly, set time, everyone needs to run. And they all run, and they luckily that ship that 4 minutes ago Turlough asked has appeared. So I presume that planet is literally on top of that planet. Literally, it's like you can walk over the footbridge and you're on another planet.
Yeah, I just went downstairs.
How that was. Yeah. It's the next door neighbour planet, literally, has turned up with a big ship, but they haven't got the budget to show it. So they just get a big, long group of people going, thank you very much, we're going to go to the other planet now. And the Doctor goes, are you coming with me? And Turlough goes, no, I'm not, Doctor, because I've been forgiven. And the Doctor goes, all right, bye then. And it's literally, cheerio. Couldn't give a shit.
Because obviously the Doctor just straight up murders Chameleon. That's quite fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry,
that's a Star Wars figure.
That's the other thing, yeah. That's the other thing. After the Master has died, the Doctor turns around and goes, maybe I should fix up poor old Chameleon after... No, fuck it, kill him.
Yeah. Literally just murders him. That's
and two, murders him.
Two assistants that Peter Davidson has offed in his time.
Yeah,
that's a good record.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So the Doctor and Turlough part ways. Yep. Doctor now has no companions. But has he got no companions? Of course not. He's got Perry still with him. She's like, Doctor, what an adventure. That was awful. I hope nothing else happens to me in the Doctor. looking directly at the camera. Shit. Yeah. And she says, look, and he goes, look, I'll take you home. And she's like, well, I've still got 3 months left of my holiday. By the way, my character is training to be a botanist. And you go, yeah, all right. Yeah. And he says, all right, you can stay with me for 3 months, you little tinker. welcome aboard, Perry. And that's the end. Dullest Doctor Who. It's not awful, it's just dull. It's terminably dull.
Do you think it's as dull as Ark of Infinity or worse?
I think it's worse because the stories, the story is borrowed from so many other stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Master's raison d'etre is silly. really silly, even for the Master. And
he hasn't thought it through.
There's far too much of I'm the chosen one, you're the chosen one. Is there a chosen one? We don't care. It's
very QAnon.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, let's score it. Let's score it before we tear it a new one. So we need to give it 100. God, 100 mini masters.
100 mini masters. I like that.
Lovely. 100
mini masters. I better go first. Yes. I thought this was intolerable bullshit. Excuse me. It was so nice to see Perry's introduction.
Yeah.
I only really remember Perry, I think, from being in the next story, which we've already talked about.
Yeah.
It completely blanked my mind how the Doctor first met her, so it was so nice to sort of get that again. But it just... It's lovely to see Perry. She's such a good companion, and as we know, she's treated terribly. The story is so trad, it's unbelievable, and it's so begged and borrowed from previous Who. We have had countless stories of a hidden god monster thing, two opposing groups of people either worshipping it or going no. And we've had that in pretty much every Doctor incarnation before Davidson. This is a well-worn story that is, so it's just dull as dishwater. The Master's subplot is frankly ridiculous when you find out he's a tiny little man. The robot is painfully annoying. It's just really boring. There's nothing about it that's exciting or fun. It's just dull, and I'm sure they all had a lovely jolly on holiday. That's great.
Yeah.
But it still sticks on my craw that they don't dress sets and try and make Sam look different from Lanzarote. Once they've already established you're in Lanzarote, all you think now is they're all in Lanzarote still. It doesn't make any sense. So I'm going to give this whole debacle 25. That's all it's going to get. 25. It's just it, but it does contain the funniest, one of the funniest ever. Bar McCoy hanging off an umbrella of his own making. My second favourite ever ending to a Doctor Who as a mini master. Oh Jesus, John.
Okay. It's unforgivably boring. there's no peril whatsoever. And I have to admit, I'm learning things for the first time today, because quite often I just look on Twitter when this was on because it was so boring. And every time anyone said anything, I just thought, I've seen this in so many episodes. And even with the cliffhanger in episode 3, which was brilliant, but not in the right way, I'm going to give this big fat goose egg.
Gonna give it zero.
Zero.
Zero. What?
The Doctor, the Master being little is the only thing that saves it from being minus.
Oh my God! You're giving it zero.
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 it's awful.
Yeah.
Tell me one good thing that's good about it.
Right.
Perry.
Perry's introduced this to Purple Gillian Brown.
Can you give it a one just for laughter?
I'll give Perry one. No, I'm giving it zero.
Okay.
Right.
Hey,
okay.
Listen, that's fine. It is the will of the Crotons.
Positives from me. There's the bit where Perry says, the Master says, I am the Master, and she says, well, I'm Purple Gillian Brown, and I can shout just as loud as you can. That's quite fun.
That's all right.
She is good, and her character, I guess, is quite new and quite modern. She's just sort of this, you know, she's someone who's out in the world and sort of just being sort of allowed to be sort of free for the first time.
Yeah.
So I think Nicola Bryant does a lot of it. We say goodbye to Mark Strickton, who's a brilliant actor. I don't think he's ever given, I mean, maybe in Enlightenment and a few others, but he's not really given much to do in Doctor Who.
No, true.
No.
Obviously, Chameleon's awful, and the guest stars are wasted. But I do think there are, it does look quite good sometimes, but like you say, I don't know why not film an episode in Lanzarote and then have sun, but then why not like marry them differently so that like they travel from somewhere else to sun, so it,
something
very strange. I think I'll go for 30 because it is entertaining and you've got the Master's TARDIS and you've got some of that stuff. So
55, that's really 55. Easy. John gave it zero. But what a poor waste of Wingard, because he just oozes Doctor Who villain, doesn't he? He should have been the villain. Yeah. I think it would have been a much better thing if it wasn't a Master story.
Yes. Yeah.
It should have been that. He should have been like an aging, decaying man who wants to get that cinnamon gas or whatever it is. So whatever. So you got an evil man trying to hoodwink his own people.
Yeah.
And then introduce a monster in it, and it would have been a lovely bit of perfectly plodding Doctor Who.
You could have had the Master sort of worm tonguing in his ear, you know.
Yeah.
I can get you all this. I can do all this for you. Horrible and evil, Wingard, and then at the end having some redemption. But him just wandering around going, oh, he's the chosen one.
Yeah.
Is a waste of Wingard. Anyone could have played that part.
A complete waste, It really is a shame. Bless him. Anyway, correspondence.
Ben Thomas says, Planet of Fire, or Why the Master is a Useless Pillock, part 347. Having shot himself with his own shrinking gun, the Master is forced to hide in a shoebox and embark on a characteristically batshit scheme that ends with him accidentally immolating himself. What a fucking plum.
That's it.
It's funny because it's true.
He also says, a fascinating serial. It also has a number of things to achieve. Write out Turlough and Chameleon, introduce Perry, potentially write the Master, set in Lanzarote so GNT can have a busman's holiday at the BBC's expense. And it manages to do it all remarkably badly.
Yeah.
It really does, doesn't it?
He says, I've got a vague memory of a story about Peter Wingard, some of the cast kidnapping the fish from the pool outside the hotel in Lanzarote as a prank, but the fish dying before they returned. It says, I found it. It wasn't fish. Peter Wingard and Dallas Howard liberated some turtles from the pool outside the hotel in Lanzarote. The turtles didn't survive the liberation, and the police were called in.
Oh, my God.
Which is still not the worst thing Peter Wingard ever did, but we won't go into that.
Goodness.
Where are we? Andrew F. says, Planet of Fire. I know the chameleon prop robot didn't work, but he could transform into any person. Why didn't they just cast an actor, or maybe a different actor in each story to play him instead of leaving him to rot in a cupboard?
The trouble is, chameleon doesn't have, like, any personality. Like, at least K-9 is, like, affirmative and has, like, this pedantic kind of thing going on. But he has nothing, does he?
No. Tamara Bumdia says, Planet of Fire, I remember the utter sadness of Chameleon turning out to be the worst robot ever. I only watched this 2 days ago and I mainly remember a lot of running about, Wingard being a perv and Delgado resorting to shrinking himself to look up Perry's shorts. Martin, he says, Planet of Fire, Lanzarote larks as a nativity play goes volcanic. Chameleon has an identity crisis. The Master enjoys living in a box. And Turlough feels brand loyalty is getting try on. Oh, brother, it's a gas. Also, how great is Anthony Ainslie in this? Full-on evil villain par excellence. Yet goes along with the tiny man in a box requirements like a trooper.
I think quite often we'll discuss in Who that sometimes the acting is terrible. This doesn't suffer from that, weirdly. It doesn't suffer from bad acting. It suffers from really bad writing and really bad plot. That's what it actually suffers from. Because they're all doing pretty good jobs. There's no one that you're going, oh, God, rain it in.
Yeah.
I mean, the Master is the Master. He's doing exactly what the Master should be doing. They're all, I mean, the guy who has to pay Howard, kudos to him, who spends most of his time painted silver, just looking pained. That's all he does.
He must have been baffled, mustn't he? He must have thought, like, oh, I gave a little jolly to Lanzarote. And they're like, oh, no, you got some studio days as well. Mm. Here's the silver paint. Get on with it.
Mm.
Listen, I know it's Lanzarote and it's 85 degrees there. We're going to cover you all in silver paint. Off you go.
Get in this three-piece suit.
But it doesn't. The reason why I hate it is not because of bad acting. It's not because it's really hammy and awful. It's because it's just really trite and dull and trad. Anyway, there you go.
Michael Fier says, Planet of Fire has the most homoerotic scenes in any Who story. It's the shorts. Also, Chameleon is so shittily built, he makes K-9 look like the T-1000. Greg Newport, Planet of Fire, was Ainley hiding on set when Turlough brings Perry into the TARDIS Polaroid camera at the ready?
Oh, no.
Or had he recruited Chameleon to do all his dirty work? Tim Smith, Planet of Fire is so dull, I challenge you to try and remember anything about the actual plot a couple of days after seeing it.
Absolutely.
Actually, I'd be impressed if, whilst watching it, you could explain the point behind any of the scenes with the natives of Planet Lanzarote.
Yeah.
I think we covered that nicely.
Yeah, you did very well, Paul.
Becky, Planet of Fire is the only thing I've ever seen Peter Wingard in where he isn't absolute filth. Colour Horizon, Planet of Fire, Turlough makes an unconscious Perry to takes an unconscious Perry to bed in his underpants. So I get the chameleon prop didn't work, but it changed shape. Why not just get different actors? And that's it for Planet of Fire.
Oh, that's it. Goodness.
Well, thank you very much, chaps, for joining me in that wallow through Planet of Fire. At least we got to get Perry's first story. That's lovely.
Exactly.
And I wonder if in our next one, Perry will maybe feature. Who knows?
Who knows?
It was lovely to see Perry. And thank you so much, everyone, again, for listening. Do keep on with the correspondence. Keep on with the pictures, especially Mr.
Fear. Yes,
I demand a picture. I demand a picture of Perry farting onto the mast.
Oh, God.
I demand it. Keep following us at Wheezing Groaning. Keep up being brilliant listeners, because we love doing this. And we'll see you next time with a third story, this time chosen by John.
Oh,
until
yay!
Then, keep on hooing.
Bye. Sorry, I was being comedian.
That's good.
Thanks. Bye.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Hello, I'm Tom, and I make a podcast where I log in to celebrities' Amazon accounts. It's called...
What a brilliant idea for a pod. There's no original pods out there anymore, but this genuinely is.
Oh, thanks, Ben Bailey-Smith. Anyway, it's called...
This is good, isn't it? It's clever, this podcast. You should do more.
Thanks, Kerry Godleyman. It's called...
This is such a great idea, by the way. What great podcast.
Shappy Corsander, you're too kind. The podcast is
but
called...
It's biographical. You can get all sorts of information out of people. This is a very good idea.
Thank you, Nick Helm. It's called My Mate Bought a Toaster.
I'm going to listen to this podcast.
Thanks, Alex Horn. Can you tell your friends?
Great.